Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Lads, it's time for...
Warning.
The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
A little ears warning. And remember, you can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. We're actually doing a Q&A this week. But we're going to focus on relationships as kids are off school. But we'll be back talking about, you know, tennis next week. Now it is time to answer your questions, which have come in to us at jen@rt.ie. And I'm delighted to be joined by our resident sex therapist, Rachel Cook. Good morning.
Hiya, Jen. How's it going?
Good. We've loads in today, so we'll try and get through them as best we can. But the first one email I got was, can Rachel tell me why do I always seem to get into intense relationships that move quickly and are very hot and cold before one of us ends things abruptly? I really don't want this to keep happening. Thanks a mil.
Oh, it certainly can. So what you're talking about here is basically a fear of intimacy. You know, a lot of us have a fear of being abandoned or being engulfed in a romantic relationship, which may not be a particularly conscious thing. But basically, you know, a lot of us, through how we were brought up, our education, you know, our lives as adults, we often just don't have the skills to kind of identify and communicate what we want and need. So I'd say to this person, definitely start reading up about attachment. So, you know, what you're describing is generally called insecure attachment. So attachment, or the attachment bond, is the emotional connection that you form as an infant with your primary caregiver, probably your mother. And basically, if your primary caregiver was able to make you feel safe and understood as a young child, if they were able to respond to your cries and accurately interpret your changing physical and emotional needs, then you generally develop a secure attachment, meaning that as an adult, you have good self-esteem, you're quite trusting, you have the ability to healthily manage conflict and respond to intimacy and navigate the ups and downs of romantic relationships. But a lot of people didn't have that growing up. You might have experienced confusing, frightening, inconsistent emotional care during infancy. You know, maybe your caregiver was anxious, depressed, substance addicted, or just, you know, so frazzled and trying to tend to so many different things. So you may have developed insecure attachment, which will mean as an adult, you probably have difficulty understanding your own emotions and the feelings of others, and you might find it difficult to connect. You shy away from intimacy and you tend to be too clingy or fearful or avoidant in a relationship. So that can combine, where you often have someone with more anxious attachment and someone with avoidant attachment, in a roller coaster effect where it is very hot and cold, and you basically keep sort of sparking off each other, but feel like you're drawn to each other like a magnet until it sort of blows up. So that's probably what's going on there.
Okay. There you go. I'm in my late 30s. This emailer says, me and my partner broke up a year ago and I'm actually really enjoying being single. However, all my friends are married with kids and it's impossible not to compare myself. And I feel like I've failed, even though I genuinely don't think I want that life. How can I feel more content and secure in myself?
I think this person is doing amazingly well, considering how still very rigid the view of happiness and success in life is. You know, the focus is still on getting married, living with one monogamous partner and having kids. You know, that's still the dominant narrative in Ireland and a lot of the world. You know, it's also very natural to compare ourselves. We're totally biologically programmed to notice if we might be the odd one out, as that kind of set threatens our, you know, sort of primitive sense of safety, belonging, and therefore survival. So, you know, I would say to this person, joining communities, making friends with people who have diverse lifestyles is generally your best bet. Filling your life with interests and projects that enrich and stimulate you, you know, and also reminding yourself that marriage and kids comes with its own challenges. And not everyone who finds themselves in that lifestyle, you know, is actually happy or content. So that can help as well. So just basically diversifying the people that you hang around with.
Good advice. Good advice. I'm a 34-year-old guy and my girlfriend is 20. A few people have said to me that she's too young for me, but isn't that ageism? She's way more mature than me. I'm pretty sure if our genders were switched, she wouldn't get any hassle for it at all. Or if we were both men or both women. So why is this a problem for some people?
Oh, this is a really, I'm glad to be able to answer this question, because, you know, basically on one hand, when you date someone much younger, they simply haven't got anywhere near the same life experience. Now, of course, people have very diverse types of lives. Some people mature faster. People have different types of experiences. But really, if someone is a lot younger, you're likely to have quite different values and want different kinds of things in your life. Another problem is that people who are very young, particularly women who are conditioned to be, you know, agreeable and people pleasing in our society, often have much poorer boundaries and awareness of their own needs when they're young. So they're, you know, they can be kind of easier to date because they're not really sure of themselves. They don't have great self-esteem, and they're kind of easy to manipulate. You know, men in our society have been conditioned to try to dominate in relationships, to hold more power in order to feel in control and therefore safe. But one way I find that men can consciously and unconsciously doing this is by dating people, generally women, a lot younger. You know, and our kind of Western culture represents men's sexual desirability as lasting, you know, very long, often throughout their lives. But women's is still seen as very fleeting. So, you know, young women come of age surrounded by reminders that they are at their most desirable when they are still at their most uncertain and insecure in their sort of late teens and early 20s. So, you know, a lot of young women end up growing up too quickly as a result of going out with much older men. But also many young men grow up way too slowly because they have, you know, a sort of a lack of it. You know, I think if men over 40 spent half as much time mentoring guys under 30 as they do chasing women in that age bracket, many more young men might make excellent romantic partners.
So, Rachel, would you say that's warranted ageism?
I think there, some of the people will say, what's the problem if the woman is happy and consensually made her own choices? And I believe it's possible to wish individuals well while still critiquing the context in which they made their choices. You can wish them well, wish them the best without endorsing what led them there. You know, I'm not proposing that we shame every sort of age disparate couple. I'm saying that we challenge the norm of heterosexual, often sort of middle-aged men dating much younger women. Because you could say that that's ageism on one hand, because, you know, people of any age can be happy together. But I think this is more about looking at the societal trends where absolutely we still see much older men dating much younger women. And then there's just usually a big power and life experience imbalance, which causes problems in the relationship.
Somebody emailed saying, I've started to read about consensual non-monogamy and keep seeing the term NRE, or new relationship energy, coming up. What's the difference between that and love?
Great question. So NRE was first coined in the mid 80s, and it describes the feelings of excitement, lust, idealization, and preoccupation with another person, sometimes to the point of obsessive thoughts. It's also known as limerence. And in the monogamous world, this honeymoon period is what is often referred to as love. They're basically the same thing. Now, it's a physiological state that can be easily explained by neuroscience. So when we experience new relationship energy, our brain is releasing a cocktail of dopamine, oxytocin, and vasopressin that fuel these feelings of desire and bonding. The brain also increases something called nerve growth factor and cortisol, which is stress hormone, while decreasing serotonin, which is why we can often find ourselves feeling a lot of insecurity and rumination when we're dating someone that we're really into, which can feel like, obsessive, a downside. But basically, understanding what's happening to us when we start dating someone and experience this can help us much better understand how to soothe our nervous system and not make any impulsive decisions during this period. It's also helpful to recognize that this is not, you know, what we call love. It's infatuation. You know, it's biologically designed to encourage us to bond and to breed. We don't actually generally know the person very well and can't view our compatibility accurately. But it's very helpful to know what's going on in our brain so that we can sort of, you know, enjoy the feelings and potentially continue the relationship with that person if we seem to be compatible. But also take it with a pinch of salt. You know, sometimes it just happens that you have this like explosive feeling like this person is totally perfect for you, but it's probably not very realistic.
Oh, how long does that normally last?
Oh, anything from a few days up to, some people will have up to a couple of years before that begins to settle. But tends to last for most people around 6 to 12 months when you continue seeing that person.
Wow. OK, we'll move on. I know you've talked about ghosting loads of times. How it isn't the person's being ghosted's fault, but I just don't seem to be able to get it into my head. Loads of guys have ghosted me recently and I just don't get it. What could I be doing wrong?
Yeah, so the assumption that you're doing something wrong makes sense when you're experiencing it as a pattern, which it is. Ghosting is a big thing. It's a big thing in our current society. I think it's wise to recognize that a huge percentage of people are ghosting and getting ghosted, particularly on dating apps, for various reasons relating to tech overwhelm, lack of responsibility and accountability that comes with the anonymity of the digital world, and also this sort of impersonal grass is greener effect of swiping. At the same time, there might be a pattern. Are you, for instance, talking to guys who've given barely any information about themselves on their profile? Maybe they're actually directly or indirectly saying that they're emotionally unavailable. Or does it tend to happen after you ask or share something with them in particular? You know, I think sort of like reflecting on this without getting obsessed with the idea that you must be doing something wrong, because it's happening to most people who are on dating apps. And the other thing you can do there is get off the apps where possible and meet people organically. You know, that's what we're seeing, a trend now of people moving away from the apps, especially as we, you know, well, let's see what happens for Christmas with old Omicron. But, you know, yeah. I think the more we can get off the apps, the better.
Absolutely. And last one, I've been getting to know two people from a dating app over the past couple of months, and I'm starting to develop strong feelings for both of them. I can't decide who I want to continue seeing. I'd be upset to end things with either person. How do I decide?
Oh, maybe you don't need to end things with either person. You can be upfront that you're not looking to become exclusive anytime soon. And you might discover that you don't want to be sexually or romantically exclusive at all. You know, more and more people are recognizing that it doesn't have to mean that you're being greedy or selfish if you'd like to have your emotional and sexual needs and desires met by more than one person. Just be upfront. Start reading about non-monogamy and talk to your friends and partners about it. And if you do want to be sexually monogamous, which is absolutely a valid choice, reflect on what you want from your life at the moment. Maybe choose partners who lead you to feel safe and comfortable rather than the people who lead you to feel the stress of not knowing whether they like you and never knowing where you stand. Maybe find out if you have compatible values and lifestyles. It doesn't have to mean the same. And have fun. Have a great time.
Lovely, lovely. Have fun. Have a great time. Rachel Cook, thanks so much for joining us. We'll chat to you next week, okay?
Talk to you, Jen.
Thanks, love. There we go. That is Rachel Cook, our sex and relationship therapist. If you have any questions for Rachel or any topic you'd like her or us to discuss, just email me.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.